Before we get into today's show, I have some urgent news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $65,000 by that date. The great news is a generous friend of the ministry has offered to match the first $10,000 given to help jumpstart giving towards this goal. But we must fully meet the $10,000 for it to be released. That's why I wanted to take a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we get into today's show, I have some urgent news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $65,000 by that date. The great news is a generous friend of the ministry has offered to match the first $10,000 given to help jumpstart giving towards this goal. But we must fully meet the $10,000 for it to be released. That's why I wanted to take a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Well, hello, welcome along to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together every week here on Premier Christian Radio as part of Faith Explored and available online, of course, at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Join the many people who download the programme every week via podcast. And what a joy it was to be joined by many of the listeners, both to the radio show and podcast, at last week's Unbelievable Conference 2016. It was a wonderful day. So many great speakers, so many great conversations I had with many people. Over 760 of you joined me at the brewery in London, the conference centre there, to look at our theme of discovering your inner evangelist. Loads of great feedback from lots of people there. And of course, we're making a DVD CD available of the day as well. So if you want to get hold of that, you couldn't come along, but you'd like to see what happened and hear what happened on the day, you can find that online at the Premier Shop. You can pre-order your DVD CD. So if you want to do that, just go to the Unbelievable website and click through from there. That's premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. But I'll be sharing more from the conference, including details of a video that we released at the conference as well last week towards the end of today's programme. Don't forget that after Unbelievable this afternoon, you can also hear Martin Eden, our political editor, on The Profile, speaking to MP Stephen Timms about his life and faith. Right now, it's time to get into this week's discussion.
You're unbelievable.
Well, today on the programme, we're meeting the ex-Christian and the ex-atheist telling their stories, and it's very much a conversation that we're going to be hearing on Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon. And it's my great pleasure to be joined by Vanessa James and Holly Ordway. We met Holly a few years ago on the programme, and so we'll be being reintroduced to her story as an ex-atheist. Vanessa is new to the programme, and she's going to be telling us about her long and winding journey as an ex-Christian. And I'll just give a little bit of an intro to both my guests today. Vanessa James is a musician. She grew up in a charismatic church in the UK, developed a very strong and committed faith. However, after experiencing a failed healing and undergoing a period of soul-searching, questioning and research, she became an atheist, something she recounts across a series of honest and very heart-wrenching blogs, actually, which she wrote while she was going through the process. But the story doesn't end there. There's now a sort of part five, I suppose, which perhaps she'll tell us about in the course of the programme. But you can read her blogs. I'll make sure that there's links from today's show page to where you can find out more about Vanessa. And Holly. Holly Ordway is a professor of English and director of the MA in Apologetics at Houston Baptist University. She's the author of Not God's Type, An Atheist Academic Lays Down Her Arms. And that tells her story of moving from a sort of assumed assured atheism to converting to Christianity, both through apologetics and the discovery of a rich seam of Christian thought and imagination in English literature. So I'm really looking forward to today's conversation between you both, Holly and Vanessa. Welcome along to the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's great to have you both in person with me as well. I always like it when I can have, rather than someone on the end of a line somewhere, it's nice to have people join me here in the studio. We'll come back to you, Holly, in a moment, because we want to hear your story again for those perhaps who are new to it. But Vanessa, welcome for the first time to Unbelievable. You're a young person, but you pretty much grew up in church as well, didn't you? Do you want to tell us just the background, how this whole crazy journey began for you?
Yeah, I was born into a Christian family, and they attended a quite charismatic, lively, quite an American-styled church in the north of England. It was probably about 2,000 people, mm-hmm. and very big into healing and miracle signs and wonders on all the prophetic side of things, which I would just obviously see that as very normal. I remember one time, like I had to bring friends along, you know, the evangelical things, bring friends along from school to see people shaking and then falling on the floor. And my friend leaders would say, you know, tell them that Jesus is coming into them. I'd have to tell my friends who weren't Christian, hey, Jesus is coming into them.
And right. And that was a bit sort of a way out for them, I'm sure.
Yeah, for them and for me it was normal. Yeah. And I didn't see anything other. Just stayed in that church, grew up, and then it was maybe about 5 years ago that I moved away to London, not for rebellion or anything. It was just time to move on. Mm. And then there I kind of landed in a church that there was a lot of honest people there. And it was very refreshing, and I was like, am I allowed to ask?
And you saw
question?
Something a bit different to what you'd been used to.
Yeah, because I'd always had questions, and I had asked my leaders before, like, you know, why do I have to go to Jesus if I want to just say something to God? Why? Different theology things, or the Bible, the stories in the Bible, the Easter story of how ridiculous it was, or Noah, Jonah and the whale. Mm. Like, this is just so... how can this actually be real? Why does no one ever question that? Why does no one ever say it? They just accept it. If you were to hear in the news today that a whale had come and taken someone, you'd not believe it. So everyone was just kind of taking it blindly. And I was really trying, because I was really wanting to be a good girl and wanted to do right.
Sure. And your parents were Christians. And it was family, it was church. It was pretty much, you know, around you your whole life.
Definitely. And if you don't... I didn't have anything else outside of it, really. I didn't really have many friends in school. I was a bit of a solitary person.
But. And reading your blog, it sounds like you really were a very committed Christian yourself. This wasn't a sort of nominal thing for you. It wasn't a thing you were being dragged along to by your parents. It was very much a heartfelt faith that you had.
I was fully absorbed in it, definitely. And I had a very, very strong belief in God. And this is one thing people have said now, like, oh, if you became an atheist, it's because you weren't saved in the first place.
You were never
really
a Christian.
Yeah, absolutely not. I was fully in that thing, like heart, soul and everything, to the point that I didn't even have myself there, which is what I now realise, that I'd not learnt to think for myself or question myself. I'd not asked, you know, Vanessa, what do you think? It was always trying to God please, because I was just absolutely in love with all of it and the whole idea and just wanting to be so good there. And
how did things sort of start to break down for you then?
Yeah, well, it was in asking these little honest questions in this other church in London that then the answers that came back were not, I couldn't integrate them into my old belief system. It was just kind of like jamming it in, but I tried because otherwise it was the devil and I didn't want that to happen. Yeah. So I'm like, no, this must be real. And it held my identity. And I was almost, I didn't realise it, but I was protecting God in a way almost because, you know, you can't let God fall apart. So he's got to fit the answer into this old belief system. And then the more that happened, well, I suppose I just realised I had more question marks, but that I was okay with that. And I lived, you know, I still had a very strong belief in God, loved Jesus, loved worship, loved everything. I was a musician, so I was very much used as the ministry keyboard player that got to play the healing music or the atmospheric worship music, and I'd often get the word anointed put on me because it wasn't that I was a good keyboard
player.
That
means you've pressed the synth, the pad that makes everything sound a bit swooshy.
Exactly what it is, and people start crying. And anyway, so that was me. And then, I went back and they had this healing service with a big American preacher, and I was taken in by all the glitz and everything, and I had these questions, which actually really helped me, because they said, is there any asthma sufferers, which I was, and he said, prepared to see a miracle, blah, 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 or all of the usual stuff, and I was like, I have these doubts and gosh, they're really making me pull for faith and believe in God. And that was the first time I realised these doubts are actually really benefiting me. So I actually surrendered those and like, I'm really going to believe this. I'm really going to believe for a healing because I was, you know, I had bad asthma times and I was ready for it. So I did what they said, running around the car park. It's quite funny, with a bunch of other asthmatics.
Yeah.
And we went running around and I had actually left my inhaler in the car down the road because it wouldn't fit in my little purse. So that was quite interesting. And I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm either going to die because I can't run upstairs without having a bit of an issue. So I ran and I really, really ran because I really had faith for it. And I didn't get any twinging, and I know myself, and I've had asthma since I was a baby, and I did
kind
not
of thought,
have
I'm healed.
Yeah, but I was a bit sceptical, and I went back to my seat, and the others all jumped on stage saying, I'm healed. And I was like, oh, my lungs are not twinging. I think I am as well, and maybe I've got to secure it. So I went on stage, said the thing, and was like, yeah, I'm healed. And all the people that knew me, and everyone knew me really well, was like cheering, you know, Facebook posts saying, the best thing about the night was Vanessa got healed. Right, everyone's known they had asthma.
Yeah.
Checked it later that evening, running up and down the road, and it was absolutely clear. And I, to the point where I rang my dad and told him,
because
my dad was a little bit on the edge. So everyone was like rejoicing, and so was I. And I was like, I can't believe it. This is amazing. So easy. So the next morning I went out for a run and didn't take my inhaler. And I got to the bottom of a hill and I started having twinges in my lungs. I was like, it's just my, you know, old psyche. And all my old teachings came back and I just said, no, that's the devil, and prayed.
But you had an asthma attack, basically.
Yeah, it got really bad. And I just thought, I was such a good God child and I really had this lovely relationship with God where I was like, we have been together through all of this and you are watching me now. Well, the God in that I believed you should be watching me, and you're watching me squirming on the floor. You are not either what I think you are, which I don't think that's the case, or you're not real. And that's the only one I could jump to, because the God I believed was a loving, caring, watchful, intelligent, knew every bit of me, knew every hair on my head. And he, that just did not make sense. And I thought, if that's the God I know, then that's just not real. And then I didn't even get mad, because he wasn't there to be mad at. He just wasn't real anymore. And then suddenly it was like my mind had all a massive field ahead of me, and I realised I was in this little closet of a room, living in a closet intellectually. And then suddenly I'm in this big field, like, oh, what about this? What about that question? And all these questions
suddenly
came up that I wanted answers.
It opened the floodgates almost at that point. I mean, we'll hear more of your story as we go along, but I mean, in a nutshell, you know, reading your blog, and it is an amazingly well-written blog and really captivating and heart-wrenching and emotional, because it talks about this process you went through where you kind of very systematically almost said, right, I'm going to sort of step back from my Christian beliefs and I'm going to sort of kind of assume atheism for a while and just see what happens. And and for you, that was, there were various points you describe of kind of emotionally kind of going from one pillar to another in terms of, no, I'm sure I believe in God, but no, I don't. Maybe that's just, you know, my old sort of thinking and all of that. Until eventually you do sort of arrive as a kind of a settled point by the end of these blogs, where you've decided, actually, no, I think I don't believe it anymore, and I'm an atheist. So we'll come back to that if we can hold that thought, because, as I say, it's not quite the end of the story, but we will get there. Holly, welcome along to the programme.
Thanks.
I thought you might be a good person to interact with, Vanessa, not least because it was nice that you do spend a little time in the UK over the summer, so I thought, let's get Holly back in the studio. Also because, in a way, your story at some level is very different, and having been an atheist, became a Christian as an adult as well. Do you want to very briefly kind of recap that story for those who perhaps, and if you want to hear the fuller version, I recommend searching back in the Unbelievable archives. But tell us what drew you to God in the end.
Well, the short version is I grew up in a completely non-religious home, so very different, not hostile, but not religious at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, concluded that since it wasn't something that we talked about and it wasn't something that we did, it wasn't important. And if something like God wasn't important, then he didn't exist.
Okay.
Because if he did exist, he'd be important enough to talk about.
Sure.
It's actually quite, I think, sound reasoning. And so I went to college and, you know, was there exposed to a very skeptical atmosphere where it was taken for granted that, you know, Christianity is not true. All the smart people, you know, are atheists. And so I said, okay, well, this makes sense. I didn't know any Christians, didn't know anything about Christianity. What little I picked up from the media seemed really stupid, to be honest. And it just made sense. Now, I didn't think atheism was necessarily particularly attractive. It's, you know, rather bleak when you face it down. But I have always really valued intellectual honesty. Mm. And my attitude was then and is now that I want to know what's true, whether or not I like it.
Right.
And so the fact that atheism was very bleak and difficult to cope with at certain points, to me, was not an argument against it. It's just, well, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Sure. What was the first pebble in your shoe, as it were, that made you start to reconsider that position?
Well, there were a couple of things. And one of them goes all the way back to my childhood, where I read imaginative literature, read the Narnia Chronicles of C.S. Lewis, read Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And there was something about those works that really gave me a vision of the world that was really beautiful and really meaningful. And as I've looked back on it further, I've realized that it was that they saw joy and beauty but didn't sugarcoat the world. Tolkien, both Tolkien and Lewis, were very upfront about the existence of pain, of suffering, of questions, particularly the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And so this was a kind of an integrated whole that was just very attractive.
Presumably, as a child reading those, though, you didn't know those were Christian authors.
I had not the faintest idea.
No.
It wasn't until much later that I realized that. And I was actually very angry with C.S. Lewis for a while. How can this be about Jesus? And then then in a very kind of condescending way, I said, well,
but
okay.
In a way, it's nice, I think, when people come to the realization later, oh, it's got this allegorical element to it, rather than it kind of being explained from the outset by your Christian parents to say, now you've got to see Jesus from the outset, because it's actually nicer, I find, to kind of discover it rather than have it shoved down your throat.
So I discovered it because I already loved the stories. Now I realize that there were some connections, which, you know, annoyed me to no end at that point. But also at the same time, I was really finding some points of disconnection in my atheism, in that it wasn't as consistent and coherent a worldview as I wanted it to be. Because I want my world to be view to be, well, true. And if it's true, it needs to be consistent. And this is the same thing for Christianity or for atheism. And one of there were two things in particular that I just couldn't figure out. One was the fact that I've felt that life had meaning of some kind. And yet, if atheism is true, it is impossible for there to be any objective meaning to life. We're just here. We're just animals. We live. We die. We enjoy ourselves, or we have a rotten life, whatever.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get rid of the fact that I thought it was important to have meaning. And I thought, well, okay, you create meaning for yourself.
That's often the mantra.
And I tried that. But the problem is I'm very self-reflective, and I realized that it's sort of like, you know, reading the play Hamlet. You know, while you're reading the play, you're in there, you're at the Castle of Elsinore, you've got the characters, you're engaged, but it's still made up. It's not real.
Yeah.
So if I'm creating meaning for myself, it's like the stage scenery in a Shakespeare play. It's very nice, but it's fake.
Yeah.
And so it left me not sure how to deal with that.
Right.
And the other thing that I couldn't fit into my atheistic worldview was the fact that I had a very clear sense that there was such a thing as right and wrong. Now, you could debate on which particular actions fell into which category, and I didn't agree with everybody on those things. But I still felt just in my bones that it was right to try to do good for others, even though I often failed. And it was wrong, for instance, to deliberately hurt other people, even if I sometimes did that too. Why would I have this belief? Why would I have it such that I felt it to be true even while I was unable to live up to it?
Well, we can't spend too much time on this, but the thing that most atheists I meet who encounter this argument say, well, it's your evolutionary past giving you the instincts for flourishing and survival. It can all be explained. You don't need God.
Well, see, that I tried that. And what I realized is, first of all, just because you can come up with an explanation doesn't mean the explanation is true. Now, evolution can come up with explanations for everything. Christian faith can come up with explanations for everything. The fact that you have an explanation does not say anything as to whether it's the true explanation or not. You have to look at what it is. But the other thing is that if you go with the, even if you take that story and you say, okay, well, what about evolution? That really didn't help me to account for my sense that it was important to do the right and avoid the wrong, even when it would not benefit myself, even when it would be disadvantageous to myself. And at that point, you get into ever more complicated explanations about altruism and kinship.
The evolutionary explanation, I suppose, explains it could give you an explanation of what is the case, but it doesn't say what we ought to do in that sense. It's the classic is ought kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. And I, as an atheist, I simply said, I don't know where this comes from.
Okay.
So that was troubling me, but I thought, well, I just can't figure it out. I've got to deal with it. Except that then I actually went, back to do my PhD, was reading Tolkien again, and was then...
Tolkien, responsible for so much.
I know, he's such a troublemaker. And then I got my PhD, I went on to teach full-time English literature, rereading these poets, and it, finally I realized these poets and Tolkien and Lewis, they're smart. These are not stupid. I can't dismiss them the way I have dismissed the dumb Christians who shout slogans in the campus quad. So I'm not interested in their faith in one sense. I don't want to become a Christian. I don't think it's true, but I feel like I've been giving them kind of short shrift. I want to find out what is this thing that they believe.
Why did it motivate them to write these amazing stories and the poetry and everything else? Yeah.
And this idea of blind faith, which as an atheist, this is what I thought faith was, that you had to believe something even though you kind of knew it wasn't true or even though there was no evidence. I couldn't do that then. I can't do it now. Blind faith is fooling yourself. Faith has to be grounded in something. And so these authors challenged me, and I thought maybe my idea of faith is a little is a little shallow. So I decided that I wanted to know why did they believe what they believed. To make a long story short, it turned out my fencing coach, of all people, was actually very well versed in Christian theology and apologetics, and was willing to dialogue with me in a non pushy way. He didn't say, you know, come to church with me, because he knew my response was to that would have been no thank you. He didn't push things on me, but he was willing to let me explore the questions, point me towards resources that really address the questions. And I discovered as I approached this that I was convinced that these arguments made sense to me. Now there were still things I didn't know the answers to. There are still things I don't know the answers to now, even much more well-versed in theology and apologetics now. But I began to see that the Christian claim made sense. It made sense of the world. It included making sense of things that I couldn't make sense of as an atheist. And it wasn't just philosophically coherent, but it made certain specific historical claims, and specifically the incarnation, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And I went into major research project mode. I'm an academic. I know how to do research. I said to myself, okay, I believe in God at this point, but this Christian thing, I don't know about that. It seems to stand or fall on the resurrection, so let me investigate, did it really happen? And I will tell you that I went into that question open-minded, but expecting to find out that you just had to take it on faith. And I discovered that really the claims made by Christians about the resurrection convinced me as history. That I became convinced as an intellectual that this is something that actually happened. And that's something...
That kind of suddenly, wow, you, the scales fell from your eyes to some extent when you realized it had this historical
I mean, it was core. It was extremely alarming because it meant that it opened the door to a whole lot of obligations and commitments that I still didn't want to do. I was not really thrilled about this, but I had come to the conclusion that this claim was true.
In its way, it's remarkably, you know, mirrors C.S. Lewis's own story, obviously, because the moral argument was certainly part of his conversion to theism, and then of course he, a little later on going the whole way, Tolkien was very instrumental, so there's lots of crossovers. But thank you so much for kind of unpacking the story again, and Vanessa, this should be a really interesting discussion actually. We've just got a couple of minutes before we have to go to our first break, believe it or not, and we've only just heard your stories, but what What's your response, just first of all, Vanessa, to Holly's story, and then I'll just get a brief response
from
you.
It's quite funny, actually. I almost felt like we were going on ladders, and there's certain levels of your kind of going to Christianity with mine coming down. Like, I think something you said with having to take things on faith. When I got to the atheism stage where I felt a little bit bleak, yeah, like you say, like, oh, it was so much prettier before with the heavenly mist, and I was looking for something bigger. I was thinking, oh, maybe we've got to pretend to make it happen. And I actually found a group of atheists that have this pretend thing. They actually just pretend to get the benefits of faith and also just get that fulfillment and find meaning in the moral thing.
What was that? Sorry.
It's, have you heard of Science Mike?
I have heard of Science Mike. Yes.
Yeah, it was on one of his podcasts, and he'd heard of this, so it's kind of very hearsay.
He was telling it.
But there's like a group of people that are doing this because they feel like there's something lacking.
We know it's not true, but we're going to pretend it's true because we need the...
So they're going to pray, they're going to use the moral codes, they're going to do this, and it works for them. I almost went that route, but no, I couldn't do it.
Did you struggle a lot with the fact that atheism meant there's nothing, once I'm dead, it's gone, finished, lights out? Was that a problem for you?
My whole journey was on a pendulum swing, it would be, because it was so disoriented. On one hand, it was like tears at night, just like, and a lot of swear words, because I'm like, is this it? Am I going to die? Yeah. And then that would then swing me over to think, I've really got to live life, and I would really live it to the full and then find something great about life.
Right.
And looking at the humanitarian way of seeing the world and the universe, if God isn't behind it, then wow, science is amazing to suddenly accidentally come up with all of this stuff. So I did find wonder in a whole other way that I never realised would be possible.
Right.
So I got to see great sides of everywhere, which has been amazing.
I mean, did it, the whole thing, the whole search kind of turn you on in a big way to science and, you know, rational explanation and everything else?
Yeah, you know, I was half mad and half amazed, because I was half mad. I'd, like, my whole life I've shut down to that, because I wasn't really allowed. If there was any bit of information that would have come in the past, I would have been like, nope, not listening to
it. If it appeared to contradict your worldview,
exactly.
You would have
I was taught to say, that is a little fox coming into your vineyard. All these sayings and slogans I got as a kid. And there's another thing you said, actually, Hollywood, that I just really respected atheists and how smart they were, and all the Christians around me. I did love them and they were caring, but I just was like, why do I respect these guys more? I get drawn to them, and I kept getting drawn to the atheist camp more.
What's your response to all that, Holly? Just because, I mean, because you kind of obviously approached it from completely the opposite side, but there may be some connections, because you obviously weren't impressed by all the Christians you met by any means. But
right, no. Well, one of the things actually right from the beginning it struck me is that you've had people say that you were never properly Christian because you became an atheist. Well, I've had actually atheists say that you were never properly an atheist because you became a Christian.
How funny is that?
The no true Scotsman fallacy runs in both directions.
Yeah, and so I was just really glad to hear you say that, because, like, okay, can we just leave that aside now? Can we just stop making that comment?
Like, we have to say one thing forever. We don't have to, it doesn't mean that's authentic.
Yeah.
So one of the things that struck me is something that I feel very strongly about as an academic. You know, I was an academic before I was a Christian. And now as a Christian, I am still an academic. And I, you know, an intellectual, I write, I teach, and I'm very passionate about education. And it absolutely horrifies me and dismays me that there are so many Christians who, with, I will grant them, the best of intentions, really try to shut down the world and try to close off anything that they think might possibly cause any doubts. And I want to say, this actually means that you don't understand your own theology, because God, if he exists, as I believe that he does, is the creator of everything. He is the ground of being. He's not just one creature among many who happens to be more powerful. He is existence itself. And everything that has come into being comes into being through him and is dependent on him. So there is nothing that we can look at, nothing that we can examine, that is outside of God's
It's kind of
world.
For me, it's almost as though, yes, we say, like you were doing, I've got to protect God from this world he's created, which, you know, otherwise it might sort of...
And God gave us, if he created us, as I believe that he did, he gave us our minds. He gave us our curiosity.
That was going to be my answer. I thought, okay, if I do end up going to hell, or if I get to the pearly gates and God says, why didn't you just say the salvation prayer again? I would have said, because you made me a rational being and you made me a pattern-seeking human and I was seeking truth. And if I think that you're in another definition truth, then I was looking for you. So if you're going to send me to hell, then...
Well, look, we'll come back to that. We've got to go to a break and we'll continue to hear both of your journeys, because again, your journey has carried on a bit further from that as well, Holly. But we're talking about the ex-Christian and the ex-atheist. Joining me today on the programme, Vanessa James and Holly Ordway. Do come back for part two of this week's Unbelievable.
Premier Christianity, for cutting-edge commentary and encouraging stories. Tackling the big issues to help you live out your faith.
The statistics tell us that the UK church is in decline, but there's another story to tell. Sam Hales investigates the rise of the church in urban areas thanks to church planting. We've also an exclusive interview with Sally Phillips, the comedy actress from Miranda and Bridget Jones, on her amazing Christian conversion. And you'll find out how to be a family that prays together and stays together. Plus your news, reviews and favourite columnists.
For your free copy of Premier Christianity, visit premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the second part of today's programme. I'm really enjoying the conversation on today's programme. It's the ex-Christian and the ex-atheist telling their stories. I'm Justin Briley, host of Unbelievable. We get Christians and non-Christians together more or less every week, except when we sometimes do two Christians with different views. But Vanessa James and Holly Ordway, my guests today on the programme. And just a reminder that you can get in touch as well if you'd like to send in your thoughts via email. It's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also send me your thoughts via the Facebook and Twitter account at UnbelievableJB on Twitter, facebook.com/UnbelievableJB to follow the show on Facebook. And we'll hear some of your thoughts later on in the programme in the feedback section today. Don't forget that later on as well, you can hear the profile. We'll be hearing from a Christian in all kinds of walks of life. We hear from them between 4 and 5. So don't miss that programme later on here on Premier Christian Radio. So we've been hearing your stories, Vanessa and Holly. Vanessa James, a musician who grew up in a charismatic church, but we heard how she lost her faith and went through a year or more of kind of wrangling with it, questioning it, finally came down to a position where she felt no, she wasn't convinced anymore and she became an atheist. Holly Ordway, sort of mirror story of that, but in the opposite direction, was a very happy atheist in many ways, but then started to get niggling doubts about the atheism and ran into Christian apologetics, Christian authors, English literature that captivated her and the worldview it came from, and eventually led to her believing it was true. So where do we go from here? Because part of it is, that I do want to get to is that both of your stories, this isn't, you know, we're all on journeys, I suppose, and none of our journeys are ever complete. But there is a kind of an addendum that you shared with me, Vanessa, and because I don't think you would necessarily now call yourself an atheist. Is that correct?
Anymore.
So what happened exactly?
Yeah, it's so funny. I was convinced that there was no way out of me being an atheist because I looked at everything and I just thought, I cannot believe again. It's just not possible. This is just makes too much sense. I am solidly here, and I was there for maybe a year, a good few months anyway. Mm. And I just thought, that's it. That's the end. And so I was starting to build a garden there, and I was loving it, and I absolutely loved being an atheist because I was growing so much. A lot of the human development areas that I was lacking in were developing.
You were finding your mind was open to all kinds of things you hadn't even had a chance, hadn't given yourself the chance to think about
before. Exactly,
yeah.
And I was really happy, I was settled, I wanted for nothing more. And then came, and so I wrote my final blog to farewell everyone, saying, happy humanist, you know, brilliant, felt just really myself. And closed the laptop that night, went to bed, and I had what I now know is called sleep paralysis, but back when I was a Christian, I thought it was the devil attacking me. Mm. It's when basically you get paralysed and you sleep, but you're conscious and you can hear things around you. And there's always something quite what feels demonic. It's either a supernatural intruder, it feels like, comes into your room, and either it suffocates you or it tries to take your life. Sounds very crazy, but it's a very real thing.
I've heard of it. In fact, Greg Boyd, I don't know if you've ever come across him, he's a Christian pastor out in the States. I'll send you the sermon. He talks specifically about this phenomenon because it has affected him in the past, I think.
But, I thought it was a very spiritual thing, but the next day when I looked up, I was like, oh, it's just
there's a psychological explanation.
So I kind of debunked that myself. Yeah. But the next bit I couldn't debunk. So I was having this experience, and as a Christian, my only way out of it was to pull on the word Jesus, which had a lot of power for me back then. because I really believed it was a very strong name, like a swear word almost. It breaks something.
Right.
It really shatters something.
Yeah,
and when I was able to break out the paralysis and I shouted the name Jesus, the dream or the terror would always go instantly. And so here I was as an atheist, having just written my final blog, and I'm having this experience and I'm going, oh no, here we go again, and I don't even believe in Jesus anymore to be able to say his name. I can't pull myself out of this. I'm just going to have to experience it. And I'm good friends with fear. We get along. We're kind of friends. But this is terrifying. I mean, it's awful. And I was just like, I'm going to have to wait this out and just like, oh, I really don't want to. The minute I said that, my arm started burning, not pins and needles, not imaginary burning, like, ouch, I need to get out of the house.
Like,
this is actually,
you were on fire.
Yeah, I was very aware. And everything in me just said, turn and look at your arm. I was like, I don't want to. I know something very weird is going to be happening. It's not going to be natural fire. It's something else. And I looked over. And I, you know, even my atheist half now is just mocking me, but I can't deny it.
Go on.
So my arm was just, it was cosmic, basically. I could see my DNA running. I could see molecules running up and down. I could see in so many multidimensionals. I could see the gravity between my fingers and I could understand the gravity. And it wasn't seeing with my eyes. It was like a cellular understanding of it all.
Like a vision was what you were having, if that's not too
so
much of a spiritual...
It was just an absorption of every sense and more that I didn't even know I had senses. I don't know, maybe I was like a... It was just everything in me that could possibly absorb information was, and I can only describe it as I had a God understanding of my hand. And so I looked up at my room and everything was as it was, the wardrobe and everything, but I could just see it in these infinite dimensions. I could even understand history. I could even sense emotions, love in places. You could see it all, and everything I'd read about was dancing in a symphony in that moment and more. So my brain was going wild in the moment, saying, okay, it's just because you read about this, it's just because that. I'm like, but it's not, I didn't even read about that, and I'm understanding it. I'm like, okay, you had cheese. I didn't have cheese. Did you have this? Everything I was going through in the moment, because moment, even though it was absolutely amazing, the most thing I was panicked about most was just losing myself again and finding myself being delusioned by...
Yeah, you didn't want to kind of... You were having some extraordinary experience, but at the same time, that part of yourself was saying... Don't just go down this road again.
Don't just believe it, yeah. Protect yourself, keep thinking, keep your brain strong, because I just got it and I was like, I don't want to lose myself. And this was my biggest panic and I just couldn't. And so I just... And the thing about this is it wasn't a spiritual, supernatural, divine thing at all. It was completely natural. The most, like what you said, the ground of being, God... And this is the word God, okay. I couldn't find any higher word to describe everything that was making this dance. There was a source. It wasn't just a magnetic energy. It was mocking me. There was this presence. And I couldn't reach for a higher word other than God. If I would go for a sound, I would rather have a sound. And I could almost imagine what it would be, because I'm a musician.
Whatever it was, it obviously... And for want of a better word, let's say God. You had an experience of God, let's say. But it was an experience that kind of... blew away your previous categories at some level of God.
Blew away absolutely everything. It was a sort of the Christian God at all. Yeah, but it's weird. Yeah, because you have this fatherly relationship with the Christian God, and it's beautiful. And I still miss that, to be honest. But I've now actually, having had that experience about 6 months ago, I've now tapped into that, because I think if I pray to God as a father, I'm not boxing him in as a father. I'm just coming in on one facet.
Right.
And I feel okay about that now. I was very scared at first, thinking this is me going to reduce God and then I'm going to go mental and lose my mind. But and some days I'll pray, like I'll look at native Indian ways of seeing God, or someone else's way of seeing God, or not even using the word God and just looking at music or dance or something. And I'm just seeing God everywhere, and it's enormous, it's massive, it's liberating and exciting. And
Does Jesus play into that at any level? Is it kind of like...
I'm a bit scared of this bit, to be honest. So the bit I'm currently, I don't know what to do about this.
Okay.
And I'm taking my time on purpose.
Well, look, I really appreciate you being honest, but if you just share what you want to share.
No, I have
like
no
have
walls.
Share.
I don't understand walls. I just kind of let everything out in case it helps anyone. But for me, in the dream, when my hand was burning and I looked at my arm, because the line I'd said to myself in my head was, oh no, this is happening again, but I can't pull myself out because I don't believe in Jesus anymore. And then my hand was being lifted up by, shut up, hate yourself, and this other hand that was like blue fluorescent lights, and it was like the shape of a hand, and it was coming down from the front, lifting up my hand, and it had stopped the burn. And I instantly recognised a very present help and a very... it was a helper, and it was something that knew me very well, and I instantly recognised it as Jesus. Again, in the moment, I was going, okay, if I'm ancient Egyptian, I'd probably say Horus. If I was anything else, right, I'd probably assign that to that.
Your logical mind was saying, don't get taken in. Exactly. This is my psych, you know.
But
my...
everything else was saying, hey, Jesus.
Okay.
And then I've not touched that since. I'm just sticking with the God world for
you're
now.
You're just
and I'm
sort
just...
of trying to process what happened that
yeah,
night, basically. Because
the atheist
about
side
a few months ago, was this? Or?
About 6 months ago it was, right. Yeah.
So, I really appreciate how honest you've been with that, because you're coming in saying, I don't really know exactly what happened, and I'm still processing it. Mm. Obviously, whatever happened, you know, who knows what may be around the corner. But I appreciate just the honesty on that, because I read your 4 blog posts, and I thought, when I got in touch with you, I just assumed I was inviting a happy atheist now onto the program. And then
totally
you kind of then said, actually, Justin, there's a bit more to the story.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh,
and
crikey.
Wow. At the very beginning of the blog, when I was thinking I was just doing a little Christian research, I didn't think I was going to go atheist, although I thought I could just embody it and look at it. I didn't think I was. But at the beginning of it, I really wanted to, I thought, if I'm ever going to believe in God, he has to be, you know, how do you describe it? Pow.
Yeah.
Just nothing, not this like crutch or this little helper God, but just mighty powerful thing. And that's kind of what
and
I found.
That's kind of what
all.
You found. Yeah. What's your response to that, Holly, other than crikey? You know?
Well, I'm just really impressed. First of all, with your honesty and with your self-analysis. And I think that level of intellectual and emotional honesty is frankly refreshing, and I wish loads more people would take that approach, because I think it's really important.
Oh, that's good. Thank you.
And I think you really touch on something that really is this thing I wanted to say, which is I think much of the time we have too small of an idea of God. And I think this goes to a lot of people who are Christians, you know, who they haven't really thought it through, or they have very narrow boxed ideas of God. And sometimes I think they view God as a kind of cosmic vending machine. Insert prayer, get result. Yeah. And then if they insert the coin and it doesn't come out the way they want, then you hammer on the machine and say, what's going on? Well, this is not quite it. Mm. But if God is real, if he is the way that Christian thinkers, theologians through the ages have understood him to be, then he's a whole lot bigger than anything we can possibly imagine. We cannot fully comprehend him. I really liked what you said, Vanessa, about the different angles of coming in, because I think that's so true. I think it's not possible for a finite human mind to comprehend the infinite, but doesn't mean we can't understand anything about him. It means we can't understand everything, and a big difference. Mm. And I think that comes to a really important point where atheists and Christians, I think, need to kind of readjust their ways of thinking about things. Because oftentimes we end up talking about God as if he were an object in the cosmos, a particularly powerful one, you know, as if he were like Zeus, you know, throwing thunderbolts or whatnot. And we forget that he makes everything, he sustains everything.
The ground of all being, as some theologians have
described
it.
And I think we also have to realize, wait a second, this whole idea, like you've used the word supernatural and spiritual, and you've been hesitating to use those words, I think, as if they meant not true. And I think that can be the case if they've been applied to a certain category of highly emotional experience. Mm. Now, I'm very skeptical of emotional manipulation. And I think that's one of the reasons I don't like certain types of modern worship services, because I think they're emotionally manipulative. And they create a certain pitch of emotion, but then you crash afterwards. Mm. And this really...
And it's hard to sustain that in the 9-to-5, if you know
exactly.
What I mean.
I love hearing this. I'm sorry, my job was to do that, basically. And I'm a film composer, and my job was to kind of create this atmosphere for when there's like an appeal and for people to put hands. And I would watch that. I'm like, you need stark daylight. If you're making a relationship decision with anyone or going into something so big, then... Oh, I just do not like doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
Something made you feel like this is a little bit... playing quite straight.
That was the devil telling me that. Of course,
So I think again, it's well-intentioned. People are, they're really... But just because well-intentioned doesn't mean it's a good idea.
And at the same time, as someone who part of their conversion story was through the emotion you felt at reading the Narnia story, at reading that poetry by Gerald Manley Hopkins or whatever. You're not saying emotion doesn't come into it.
No, and that's actually, I'm really glad you made that point, because I think, I mean, our emotions are also part of who we are, and they can point us to things that we need to look at. So I think the fact that we feel joy, that we feel longing, that we feel a desire for meaning, this tells us something.
Yeah.
But it has to come with the intellect. But you also can't have, if you have the intellect without your emotions, then you're kind of floating brain. So it's the both and. The intellect can be manipulated. So can the emotions. It can go both ways. But what I wanted to get back to, though, is this idea of associating the supernatural with this kind of hyped up emotional state.
Sure.
And if that's what the supernatural is, then, well, forget about it. I'm with you on that one. But I think we have to realize that, wait a second. There's the natural world that we see, we touch. There's the desk around here. We're doing this show. There's our bodies. But then there's all the things that we can't see that are also real. And we take a lot of those things for granted. Well, our perception of self, the force of gravity. We take these things, all these forces operating in our bodies that we can't see, but we know they're real. Our relationships with each other, love, friendship, loyalty, these are real, yet we can't see them. We can't
measure
them.
They're not material things.
Yeah, they're not material, but they're real.
Yes.
And I think that's where you can see a different understanding of what the word supernatural means. It means something beyond or beside or in addition to the world that we can see, hear, and touch. And I think recognizing that could be real is important.
I mean, there are some philosophers, I think of Keith Ward, who's been on this program before, who actually believe, as idealists, that's the real thing, and the material stuff is actually the less real stuff than the things you're describing there. But I mean, what sort of bells is this ringing in your head, Vanessa, as you're hearing Holly talk about this?
The funny thing now with my perspective is that I kind of am agreeing with everything, because it's almost giving me the license to understand everything is just a language. And so the idea of supernatural, this isn't reality, this is just a mask. There's so much more going on underneath, and we're all trying to access it in different ways. And I'm almost seeing that my atheist language was the same as my Christian language, is the same as my whatever I am language now. So I'm... Yeah.
You're finding it is an interesting space you're occupying now. I mean, when you were on that journey, you had some interesting experiences along the way. I believe you went along to the Sunday Assembly, for instance, which is, I don't know if you've heard of it, Holly, but it's a kind of church for atheists in a way. It started out here in London, now has, I think, outlets all over the world. Yeah. I did just note down what you wrote in your blog, and I'll just read it out. You went along to Sunday Assembly, really enjoyed it. They kind of sing pop songs and sort of shout out and have a good time, and it's led by a comedian and everything. And you said you ended up writing, "The visit was a worthy expedition, but I have to say I felt it lacked depth. Maybe I've attached that Sunday morning format to the spiritual transcendental experience that I was weaned on since birth, reminding me too much of the setting where I'd meet a higher power and get a feeling of elevation from that supernatural union with other heaven-bound heirs. Things I could now probably explain with psychology and neuroscience, but still, it remains to me that there is clearly something valuable buried inside transcendence for the human experience." So you got that sense that they were kind of after the same thing you kind of enjoyed when you were, you know, a believer and going to church and so on. But you obviously at that point in your blog were sort of saying, no, I'm a bit wary actually of even stepping towards that again from an atheist perspective. But do you feel though, like where you are now, you're kind of saying actually there does have to be this transcendence that we kind of come into contact with?
I long for it. As for that, I've been going to a Unitarian church recently because I feel like it's quite embracive of all kinds of thinking and types. And we have moments of where we will just sit quietly in contemplation. And that's quite a spiritual thing. And you're sat in this room with other humans thinking, feeling all together, and you're focusing on something. But I just, in those moments even, I just think, nothing is ever going to beat this unified uproar of humans that are all just going crazy for this one thing that you've made to believe in exactly
so
the same way.
Do you mean the church experience
the
you
church,
grew up on?
Yeah, right, especially yeah. the evangelical church, because you've got emotions, you've got the music, everything is just... And that right. feeling, it's not real. It's fantasy. It's Hollywood when you can get into marriage. You kind of see, oh, yeah. Hollywood's not real. And yeah, it was lovely. And I would say I miss it because it's a great human experience. It's almost like a drug, but it's not real and it's not good for me. But I replace that now with... Well, if you go to like music festivals, I've just come back from a festival and just everyone singing together, looking around, and the bond between
yeah. I mean, I was going to say people are still kind of getting that from the Coldplay gig, you know. And
yeah.
and it's interesting. I've just commissioned an article for my magazine actually on the fact that so many of the songs that Coldplay play have this kind of transcendental kind of, you know, we're in a universe full of stars and we're all kind of stars and all this stuff. So it's almost like people constantly want to reach for these kind of big feeling of like, yeah. I'm connected with everything.
It's like an escapism thing. You kind of feel bigger than yourself. And I write film music that's very big because I like delving into the deep emotional world because I'm like, I don't know, I'm not very good at being emotional every day.
Well, you know, we've critiqued the emotional manipulation through music, but I think I'd rather push back a little bit and say, just because you have an emotion during a worship service doesn't mean it's false.
Right.
Right?
I think it's dangerous, though, because it's like fantasy when you indulge in it. It's like, it's delicious and it's tasty. And it's like, oh, that'd be really nice. But I don't know.
Well, this is just really interesting because there's almost a fear of if it makes me happy, it's too good to be true. Mm. Right? And I think, on the one hand, I think these things can be overdone. But I think along the same way that... you can overdo it on sweets because sweets are delicious. But if you only ate sweets, you'd have a sugar crash and you'd be really unhealthy. Your moods would swing and all that. Definitely not healthy to have a diet only of sugar. But it's actually true that it's delicious. The sweetness is real. And there's no reason to deny the sweetness is real just because you know that you can't have a steady diet of it. So I think the problem is not that we as human beings are moved by music or feel a profound sense of connection. The problem is when that's left to be by itself with no framework to support it, to help people contextualize it, understand that there's more than this and not depend exclusively on it.
I'd say from my perspective, I grew up in a charismatic church and where there wasn't a lot of theology or apologetics or anything like that going on. And I saw a lot of people for whom their faith was very much based on the feelings they got from that experience, from the things that happened in church. Later on, I met a more diverse group of Christians and I came to really appreciate more kind of formal settings of worship, but which have their roots going back centuries, you know. And what I assumed were dry, dead traditions turned out to be actually quite helpful very often, things that kind of actually you were joining in the prayers of saints that go back thousands of years. And I realized actually there's this kind of historical core that, so you don't have to just depend on feelings. You can kind of depend on a kind of a tradition and a kind of a thing that's been around for a long time as well. I mean, just coming back to you quickly, Holly, because I hinted your story didn't finish at the point there you kind of became a Christian. You eventually actually, having sort of, I guess, gone into a kind of Protestant kind of Christianity, converted to Catholicism. And I just wondered whether that ties in at all to anything we've been talking about.
I think it does, actually, in a number of different ways. And one of them is that, you know, as a Protestant Christian, I still had lots of questions. One of the most pressing ones is, how do we know that the Bible is true? And it really wasn't particularly convincing to me to say, or how do we interpret the Bible? You know, even if we agree that it's true, which I was willing to agree at that point, you know, we've got different interpretations of all these different points, and they can't all be right. So you've got Christians disagreeing with each other about what the Bible means, and this is kind of crazy. And so I started asking myself, well, how do we know that this interpretation is correct? Well, you've got these commentaries. Well, how do you know that commentator is correct? We can go back to the original languages. Well, like every believer is supposed to learn Greek and Hebrew? You know, this can't possibly be the case because that would rule out faith for millions of people, frankly, throughout history. And so this, you know, kept me asking questions, and also just looking at, you know, the place of emotion and the body and the mind. Where can these things all come into play? And I began to make a long story short, became a Catholic. And one of the things that convinced me that Catholicism was true is that there's a coherent explanation of how it is that we can interpret Scripture, which is that the Spirit's working through the visible church, through the church that Jesus founded, that he had Peter lead, and that's been transmitted since then, and that, you know, the Scripture says that the Spirit will guide guide us to the truth. And that makes sense in the context of guiding through the church, because obviously it's empirically the case that the Holy Spirit does not guide each individual believer to the truth, because faithful Christians come up with different responses sure. to these questions. So that understanding, and again, this isn't in a vacuum, because I believe in the Holy Spirit, in Jesus, in the historicity of the resurrection for other reasons. So these are already in place. I'm already convinced on these points. And then, you know, coming back to your point about, you know, the emotions, and in Catholic worship, and to a lesser extent in some forms of Anglican worship, because I was in an Episcopalian church, but above all, as a Catholic, the liturgy, the structure of worship, is such that it scaffolds you, it gives you a way of understanding all the different range of emotions, positive and negative. You don't just pick the happy psalms.
Right.
We get the sad ones too. You get the difficult bits. And it allows for an emotional response. And I've had some deeply emotional responses during Mass, but
They're not what you build your faith on.
Exactly. And
that's the big thing, I think, because in my church, that was what was dangerous, and that everything was there. And then as soon as you start thinking, that all falls down, and that's a heck of a height to fall down from. And if you can have it in balance with everything.
What do you make of Holly's story? Because when I told you before we went came in, that a little, I kind of filled you in a little bit on Holly's story and her conversion to Catholicism and so on. And you were quite surprised, because to some extent that almost feels like, well, like, that's going into a very rigid, structured kind of...
Yeah, I was field. Surprised, Holly.
Why do you say that?
I thought, I guess I'm only coming out of my own experience thinking, as, you know, I know what it's like to feel like an atheist where there's no, you just cannot go anywhere else. And I think just to then go into something... I just
this actually is a great question.
And I just think, how could you not maybe see that there's the other languages or things like when you see the Christian story retold in so many other mythologies, in the Greek, in astrology and other things, I don't understand how you can stay to one. The only way I could probably understand it is that you are zoning in on a language and we all have to talk one language because it's easiest. But
because your story, where it stands at the moment, is I'm getting the sense that you're saying, I had this amazing experience, so I'm definitely not an atheist anymore. But you'd find it very hard to kind of, what you would see as, restrict yourself to that one narrative of Christianity any longer. You
definitely
feel like it's got to be bigger than that one story.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Definitely. And I feel, especially Catholicism, which is very quite structured, and I suppose that's helpful in some ways. But do you take Catholicism but also understand that other ones are true as well?
I'll get you to answer that after a short break. We're already out of time in our second section, so do join us again for the final part of today's programme in just a moment's time. Welcome back to the final part of today's Unbelievable, and I hope you've been enjoying the conversation between Vanessa and Holly today, and we'll be joining them again for the final part of the discussion in a moment's time. We've got some of your feedback as well to recent editions of the programme. In particular, last week's debate between Sean McDowell and Ken Humphreys on whether the apostles were martyred for their faith. That provoked quite a lot of reaction, and we'll be hearing what you had to say about it. I will be giving you details as well about a video we've released as well. It's currently available at the Unbelievable website. It's my take on the fine-tuning of the universe as evidence for God, and we actually showed it at the Unbelievable conference last week. And just another note to say, if you were there and I couldn't say hello or you didn't say hi to me, it's one of those things that since I got home from the conference and people have been in touch with me about it, people who are show listeners have said, oh, I went went along and I've said, oh, you should have introduced yourself. But it was great to meet all those who did introduce themselves at the conference, and a really packed day, lots of great great feedback. And I even received an email from a pastor who he and his son were due to fly out from Seattle in Washington in the States for the conference, which would have been amazing. But unfortunately, their flights were cancelled at the last minute. And so they weren't able to join me. So I'm going to be sending you the DVD free of charge because that was such a shame that you weren't able to come out. But I do know other people who also came from abroad for this year's conference. So a really great day. And I hope that if you're interested in seeing it for yourself, if you couldn't join us for the day, and indeed many people who were there pre-ordered the DVD anyway, because of course you can't go to all the seminars that are on offer because many of them run at the same time. If you want to get yourself a copy of the DVD CD, then do pre-order one from the Premier shop. That's online at premier.org.uk/shop, but you can find a link from the Unbelievable webpage as well, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And that's the place to go for all your other needs, as well as this video, which I'll explain a bit more about later in case you're interested in watching that. Still to come this afternoon, Martin Eden, our political editor, speaks to Christian MP Stephen Timms about his life and faith on The Profile. And if you're joining us next week for Unbelievable, we'll be hearing some highlights from this year's conference. Some of the speakers we had there, J. John, Gary Habermas, Tanya Walker. We had a youth apologetic stream going on. Beth Grove, very popular seminar on Islam as well. So we'll be hearing some highlights from all of that, so you can at least get a taster of what happened on the day as well. And our partners, of course, for this year's conference were the Museum of the Bible and the Christian Thinkers Society. And Kerry L. Summers, the president of the Museum of the Bible, spoke on this amazing development. And you'll hear more about that in a future edition of the programme. But we were all amazed, frankly, and very enthusiastic about this new project that's set for opening in Washington in 2017, but is being rolled out in various ways across the globe, the Museum of the Bible. And of course, Jeremiah J. Johnston was due to be with us for the conference, but in the end had to take doctor's advice on behalf of his wife and stay home because she was ready to give birth to triplets, and the date got moved to very near the conference, and so it was thought best for Jerry, his dad, to step in on some of those seminars, and Jerry did a great job. I'm really glad to announce that Jeremiah and Audrey had their three triplets, two identical, one non-identical, and all boys, and I've seen the photos on Facebook and they look amazing, and a very happy family there, bringing the total number of children to five for the Johnstons. So congratulations to Jeremiah and Audrey, and well, we hope to hear from Jeremiah in the not too distant future, and I'm sure he'll tell us all about the sleepless nights that they're both enduring slash enjoying with the new arrivals. So look out for the details of the conference on next week's programme.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So we've been hearing two fascinating stories on the programme today, Holly Ordway and Vanessa James. Holly Ordway's story of going from atheism to Christianity, and Vanessa James's story of going from Christianity to atheism, and then back to a sort of a spiritual belief again. Two really interesting people joining me on today's programme. And as we start to close out this discussion, guys, I just wanted to throw it back to Holly. What do you say to that question, Holly, about have you kind of boxed yourself in by becoming a Catholic, asks Vanessa?
No. And I would actually go back to your vision of seeing all the, you know, the DNA in your arm. And I would say, okay, if you walk outside and you see the natural world and you think, wow, this is beautiful and I'm moved and I'm excited by it, and you say, I want to learn more about it, and you go to the science books and they explain the way that clouds form and rain falls and it's a certain way, I would say, does that box you in? Does that limit your appreciation of the beauty of nature? I would say no. I wouldn't think that it would. You'd want to say, no, I'm going to not learn about the way that nature works because that's going to box me in.
I just think you need a bit of everything, though, because I even found so much, as an atheist, even looking at Hinduism and seeing that all the gods are a representation of a part of Jesus, I understood more there. And the more languages I speak, or the more I travel around the world, the more I get a multicolored, faceted view of God. Whereas this, I'm not sure, even if I got my relationship with Jesus back, I don't think I could stay just using that as my main language.
Right.
I get so much from looking at how someone else believes.
Well, I would say, first of all, it's not completely an either or. All truth is God's truth. And so if another religion, another way of looking at the world provides some insights, those are genuine insights. And so, for instance, if you look at the way that there are echoes of Jesus in different mythologies, well, I would say, well, good for them, because Jesus is real. This actually happened. And if this really is the cosmic hinge of the universe, well, isn't it?
I think C.S. Lewis specifically picked this up. Because I think one of the things that he was chatting about with Tolkien was, okay, I believe in God, but I see this dying, rising Messiah thing happening in all these other religions. Mm. Why is Christianity the true one? And I think, was it Tolkien who suggested to him, what if Christianity is the true myth?
Exactly.
Upon which all those other things are reflections or kind of echoes of.
Yeah, it's the myth that really happened.
Yes, exactly. Does that in any way kind of make sense to you, Vanessa?
No.
That
came after Horus, though. Right?
Well, here's the thing, though.
But I guess from God's perspective, it doesn't really matter where it took place. I think the view that as I see it, Lewis and Tolkien took was God did this act in history, and everything before and after that looks like this is because the whole of history is kind of converging on this event.
What gives the Christians the right to say that that's the truth and not another one of the
other
mythologies?
I'll pass that one to you,
Holly. Well, I'm sure they're all claiming it.
Well, that's the thing. Just because different people are claiming it doesn't mean they're all right. You could say just equally well, what right does a biologist have to tell me how my DNA works? Now, if it has been revealed to people, and there are truths of reason that we can figure out, and you've gotten many of them yourself. There are. But there are also truths of revelation, and the Catholic claim is that it's specifically through the visible church that Jesus founded, and Jesus is significant because he's God himself, he's incarnate, and that this is a historical event. This is something that really happened.
I've heard otherwise, though, as well. Because I've done this, I'm like, okay, so this book says that. Yes, it definitely happened. And this book says no, it doesn't.
Well, you, at a certain point, you just have to. If you say people say different things, therefore I don't believe. You're still picking one of those answers. So you,
I don't know. I think I'm on the outside of it and just say, okay, I can get something from that, but I can't bear to put a flag down on anything when everyone is contradicting things, and I wasn't there. Wasn't there back in the day, so I can't.
Well, then, I mean, in a certain sense, it's impossible to learn anything from history because you weren't there.
No, I do. I think I take it all, and I'll take what kind of resonates with me and what I can learn from it, and I absorb lots of things. I just can't claim that was true and that wasn't, when there's two opposing arguments that I actually think, oh, gosh, yeah, you've got some good stuff to say there.
Well, that's actually where, I mean, I think this is one of the big the issues of or one of the, I think, the big strengths of being a Catholic, mm-hmm. is I think there's really good reasons to believe that this is a transmission that we can trust. Mm. And so the claim of authority, I think, is one of the most significant, because if you become convinced that this is actually a trustworthy transmission of information, then you have a reason to choose that answer versus others that don't have that reliable transmission of information. And again, this is not something that I would expect anybody to just be able to say, oh, yes. Mm. But I want to come back to this idea of there being reasons for it. It's not just picking. It's, they might agree or disagree with the reasons, but there are
reasons to have any faith. When I've looked around, I'm like, yeah, there's great reasons to join either one of these camps. And I've looked at it from here and I've gone, no, I don't want to join anything right now.
So I mean, we are going to have to start to draw the conversation to a close. And I'm really sorry, because I'd love to do another show. Maybe we could set something up at another time. But I guess, you know, and one of the things that's been playing on my mind since I've heard your story, and particularly the end part of it, Vanessa, is, what would it take to bring you back?
Yeah.
But if you did come back, I just have a feeling it wouldn't look like what you had, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what
I used
would
to ask myself that question.
Because if a kind of a most amazing, incredible vision doesn't actually quite get you there, it's like, what will? You know?
I know, and that has done. It's brought me back to spirituality and God in a brand new sense. But as for a relationship with Jesus, I'm getting loads out of the Bible more than ever by not taking things so literally.
Right.
And as for a relationship with him, that's the bit I'm a little bit skeptical. I don't know. And that vision really did happen. I recognise that thing as Jesus. I just am taking my time. I've been a Christian for however long.
You're on a journey, and we all are.
Watch this space. I'll be a Buddhist next month.
Holly, thank you for kind of coming back and telling us about your story as well. If you want more on Holly, hollyordway.com. And you're going to be adding, I think, hopefully, by the time this gets broadcast, the final part of this blogging that you've been doing,
I'm
Vanessa.
Work towards that.
And that'll be at theallowed.com, I think, won't it?
Theallowed.com.
Both the links available from my show page. Go there, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. In the meantime, thank you both for being with me and all the very best.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Why not get in touch with me? unbelievable@premier.org.uk is the email address if you'd like to send your thoughts in that way. You can tweet me at unbelievablejb or facebook.com/unbelievablejb to follow on the Facebook site. And just this last week, I released on my Facebook and Twitter feed a new video that I've recorded. It's my take on the fine-tuning of the universe argument for the existence of God. It's called How a Dice Can Show That God Exists. Now, I've already received what I knew would come in, people saying it's a die, not a dice. Dice is the plural of die. I know, but it just looks wrong when you write that as the heading of a video, how a die can show that God exists. So we just went with dice. We broke the grammatical rules. But quite apart from that, it's a video that I actually aired at Unbelievable, the conference last Saturday. That was its premiere, if you like. And it's only 4.5 minutes long. But I hope it helps to give a little bit of an introduction and a bit of a conversation starter, at the very least, to the question of whether we are just here as a result of a roll of the cosmic dice, or whether there could have been intention and design behind it. So if you're interested in watching that video, which was brilliantly produced, I should say, by Adam Brennan, who is the person responsible for uploading the podcast to the website every week, and is a man behind the scenes, very often unseen, and not one who puts himself forward, but does a fantastic job every week helping with the production of Unbelievable, then go and check that out. He's also a very talented video producer. It's online now at the Unbelievable website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. A link there as well to the YouTube version as well, if you want to share it that way. Always good to share these things if you can. We want this to get out to as many people as possible. And also, just before we get to feedback, wanted to just keep you up to date on the fact that I'm going to be doing a live event out in Los Angeles, or in the Los Angeles area, Saturday the 27th of August. I'm heading out to the States and doing, for the first time, an unbelievable event in the Los Angeles area. It's going to be at a church called Everyday Church. It's going to feature me moderating a discussion between Sean McDowell, my Christian guest from last week, and Ryan Bell, who was well known as the person who took a year out from God, a year without God, having been a Seventh-day Adventist pastor. He decided to try life without God for a year after encountering various doubts and difficulties, and he stayed an atheist at the end of that. And so we're going to be hearing both their stories in the course of this discussion on belief and faith and so on. And if you'd like to join us, well, we're going to be releasing full details hopefully next week, so that you can see what it's all about and where you need to be and exactly what time it's at and all that kind of thing. I look forward, just as I was able to meet lots of British listeners of the program at this year's conference, to meeting hopefully a number of American listeners as well for that date, 27th of August in the evening. If you can ring fence that in your diary, if you're living in the California, Los Angeles area. Let's go to some of your thoughts via email. Corey Markham is a former show guest who wants to tell us about a new podcast venture. It's available on YouTube. It's a demo of a podcast about the historical Jesus he's currently working on with Drew Sokol, a pastor located out in Philadelphia. He actually contacted me after I was on your show, and upon hitting it off with each other, we decided to start this project together. Anyway, I'd love to hear any feedback or suggestions you might have for us, if at all possible. Well, Corey, I listened to the demo. I thought it was very, very good indeed. So yes, I can thoroughly encourage people to listen to that. Corey, as it were, as the skeptic, and Drew Sokol as the believer, though himself having gone through a deeply skeptical phase as well in his life, talking about the historical Jesus, and just, I thought, very well produced as well. So if you can look that up, do look it up on YouTube, and I think it's called something like The Historical Jesus, The Sitting Room Demo, or something like that. But I'll try and put a link with today's program to it as well. Let's go to your thoughts on the McDowell versus Humphrey debate. Did the apostles die for their faith? Were they martyred for their faith? Josh McDowell took on Jesus mythicist Ken Humphreys. And to be honest, that's where a lot of the debate revolved around. Do we have documentary evidence for the apostles, Jesus, and so on? This was from Jordan, who said, "I'm a huge fan of your show. As a non-believer, I usually find myself in agreement with the skeptics you have on the programme. For a long time, I've wanted to hear a debate on the specific issue of the martyrdom of the apostles. I was so excited to see the topic pop up on my podcast feed, but after listening to it, I was very disappointed. This ended up being one of the worst debates I've heard on your show. Having researched the subject myself for several years, I found myself agreeing with Sean McDowell on nearly every single point, while being in strong disagreement to the point of aggravation with Ken Humphrey, especially with his absurd demand that nothing in the Bible should be considered serious evidence. The fact that he dismissed the quotation of First Clement just because it was considered scripture by some early Christians caused me to literally laugh out loud. I beg you to do this debate again in the near future, but this time with a competent secular scholar like Bart Ehrman or James Crossley. Thanks for your show anyway, Justin." Thank you. And I had a similar comment, I think, via Twitter or Facebook saying, "Can we take a mulligan on this one, Justin, and do it again?" So some people not at all happy with the way Ken brought himself across in that. This one from Tony says, "Just listen to the latest podcast and I'm amused that Ken Humphreys cried for proof from non-Christian sources claiming that through the centuries Christians have embellished the Gospels, yet he didn't provide any evidence that they were embellished. Likewise, he asserted that the writings of Josephus were tampered with by Christians, yet he gave no proof for his claim. Seems to me his arguments are based on assumptions. By Ken's criteria, we have to reject any ancient Egyptian, Roman, or Greek writings that refer to events or histories that mention a god or gods, because they're surely embellished and unreliable. Does he reject the writings of Herodotus? He certainly was religious and influenced by the pantheon of Greek gods in his writings. I appreciated Sean's calm demeanour, but I wonder why he didn't mention Tacitus, as he confirmed details about Jesus that are recorded in the Gospels, giving secular credence to the Bible's reliability as a historical document." Well, I think the reason Sean didn't go that was because we weren't really having a debate, or supposed to be having a debate, on the historicity of Jesus. It was more on the issue of the apostles themselves. But thank you. Gabriel in Birmingham, Alabama says, "I was sad to hear Ken was not familiar with the caliber of guests you tend to have on your show. He showed a measure of outright contempt for Christian apologetics, ruling it out a priori, and conveniently neglecting the fact that he too is attempting to defend his own view. I'm not sure he realizes how unhelpful his combative and uncharitable disposition stifles dialogues like the one Unbelievable seek to foster. Justin, I thought you handled yourself very well among his unwarranted accusations of giving preference to Sean's side. He only showed how out of touch he is with your style and spirit of moderation." Thank you very much, Gabriel. And thank you also to Michael, who's an atheist skeptic, writing, says, "After several weeks of mamby-pamby intra-Christian collegiality, what a right smash-up this week's show was. Mr. Humphreys was quite the disagreeable guest on out of the gate. In addition to talking over Mr. McDowell and accusing Justin of censoring him, he gnawed at the no secular evidence for Jesus page from his mythicist playbook over and over and over again. We get it. Of course, we non-mythicists are left wondering that if there was no Jesus, were there then no disciples? If there were no disciples, then when and where and how did the world's most widespread religion come into being? Occam's razor cuts both ways. How much simpler to accept that an itinerant apocalyptic Jewish preacher was executed by the Romans in Jerusalem, and a movement arose after what others perceived as post-mortem appearances to his followers. Paul and others writing in his name came along and piled a mess of his own apocalyptic theologizing on top of the story, and Christianity was born there. The minimal facts, yes, more minimal than Professor Habermas's, are sorted without appeal to fanciful cabals and improbable conspiracy theories. As for the oft-repeated, the disciples wouldn't have died for a lie argument, as Candida Moss has correctly pointed out, we have no way of knowing how many or how few actually died for their beliefs. Did some? Apparently, at least according to scriptural accounts and early church traditions. Even if the original conspirators knew their new religion was a tissue of lies, who's to say they were given the opportunity to recant before their execution?" And so on. But anyway, thank you very much, Michael. Thank you for being in touch. Just a few people as well on Facebook who got in touch about that show. Shane McKee says, as a Christian atheist, I felt Sean did a great job on this and really felt Ken was trying to support the mythicist case on really flimsy evidence and poor logic. That said, the debate did highlight the serious lack of evidence connected with what happened to the apostles or the reasons why a few of them ended up getting killed in an era where that sort of thing was not uncommon for noisy dissenters. Importantly, it shows that the would you die for a lie argument in connection with the supposed resurrection of Jesus the Nazarene is astonishingly weak, but I think we'll hear more from Sean. He seems very able, and maybe someday he'll solve the conundrum and come over to the dark side. Well, I mean, to give him his due, Shane, we hardly managed to get onto that subject of whether it can be shown that the disciples were indeed killed for their faith, and if they you can show that, whether that means that they weren't willing to die for a lie and so on, because we spent so much time obviously last week going around the houses with what Ken would or wouldn't allow as evidence for the apostles in the first place. So I think there is probably another discussion to be had there as well. Jennifer Bate says, thanks, I'm still listening and re-listening to this show. It's fantastic we can hear these discussions, and great credit to you once again, Justin. Thanks too for the various academics, both atheists and others, and thinking Christians that take part in the show, which makes it so inspirational. Lovely message, Jennifer. Thank you. Randy says, great show. The fact that Josephus mentioned James the Just kind of blows the mythicist position out of the water. He does not, however, state that James was martyred for his faith, only that he broke the law. And Ryan says, Mr. Humphreys seemed to be committing the genetic fallacy by implying that Christians in antiquity couldn't be trusted to report something to be true that happens to coincide with their belief system. If you turn the tables, does that mean Mr. Humphrey, as well as other mythicists, can't be trusted in their writings that Jesus or the apostles didn't exist? Mr. McDowell, on the other hand, seemed to be dodging the question regarding non-Christian and non-biblical sources for the apostles' martyrdom. In addition, I think he should have been a little more upfront regarding the Q document as something hypothetical or possible. The way it was presented made it seem concrete and factual. I'd love to hear a debate on this topic again. It is a fascinating one, but with different representatives on both sides. And Thomas says, something that has to be said apart from the evidence presented for the question, Justin, what a disgraceful performance by Ken Humphreys. He was terrifically rude to Sean McDowell the entire way through, from shouting, can you hear, to demanding more time than he was receiving and calling you a biased host, Justin, when regular listeners are all too aware you are perhaps too fair sometimes. As far as the actual argument went, Humphreys made a complete nonsense argument trying to reduce the Gospels to something less than history by inventing a category of literature he calls apologetics, which is surely anachronistic and within the abilities of professional historians to analyse. He then moved later on in the debate to allowing the Gospels as sources, though no qualification as to what he meant by this was offered, which is suspicious since he clearly doesn't believe they're even historical. And you say his approach to secular sources was perhaps even worse. Anyway, thank you very much. Lots of response to that programme of a similar nature. And I appreciate all those who have been in touch about the programme. Perhaps we will do this subject again. I imagine we will at some point in the future. But thank you for getting in touch this week. And as I said, Sean joins me with Ryan Bell for that discussion in the LA area on the 27th of August. We'll try and release more details so that you can have a website or an event page to look at and see if you're able to come along if you live out in the US. I do really appreciate all the US listeners. Probably in many ways makes up the bulk of the podcast listening audience out in the USA. And it's been great to know so many of you over the years as the show has developed over time. But whether you're listening today by radio, via Premier Christian Radio or podcast, it's been great to have you with me. And I hope you can come along at the same time next week. Let me tell you what's coming up then. You're unbelievable. Well, we're going to be hearing some highlights from this year's Unbelievable Conference. Perhaps you were there. Well, you'll be able to relive some of the best bits. And if you weren't there, you'll get a taster about what the day was all about, as we heard from 12, 13, maybe 14 even speakers across the course of the day in all kinds of seminars on all kinds of topics with the general theme of discovering your inner evangelist. So look forward to that at the same time next week. And if you want to get hold of the DVD CD for yourself, don't forget you can pre-order yours right now at the Premier Shop. Go to the Unbelievable webpage to find out more and indeed to listen back to today's programme. PremierChristianRadio.com/Unbelievable. For the moment, it's au revoir from me, handing over to Martin Eden for this week's profile.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Stephen at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Stephen.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.